91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. In today's digital age, many newspapers struggle to keep readers and advertising. Also, there's a tough battle to keep both staff and revenue. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. But this hour, we learn about an exception. The business-oriented weekly newspaper, Miami Today, is alive and well, thank you. For 33 years, it served an important role to inform those with the biggest stakes. The Miami Today motto tells it best, a singular voice in an evolving city. We'll visit with the vibrant team that keeps the paper alive and well in minutes. First, it's NPR and regional news. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you. Bonnie Berman has the day off. She'll be back with you tomorrow. Most often we think of insider information in terms of possible jail terms for big-time players. Poor Martha Stewart. But here in South Florida, there's been insider business journalism for more than three decades now. We speak of the weekly Miami Today newspaper, which keeps up with South Florida's unique economy and personalities that shape it. With us now is the Vice President of Miami Today, Carmen Betancourt Lewis. She's a longtime Miamian, a graduate of Coral Gables High, and is the much better half of Miami Today's resolute founder. He's and the publisher, Michael Lewis, who with USA, who's with us as well today. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Joe.
I wanted to have the both of you on this program for quite a while because you have such a niche in the journalistic market here. How tough is it to keep a weekly newspaper going, a real newspaper?
Well, there are two halves of a newspaper, and the part that Carmen does is the hard part, and that's keeping the paper solvent. And that's very difficult, and she can speak to that. As far as the news, the news, it falls out of trees in Miami. This is the best news town in the United States. And our job, Joe, is not to find news, but to select news from all the things that are there. What's the most important thing to our readers? And what's going to have the longest legs? What's going to have the longest life? If it doesn't have shelf life, we're not interested. One of the things we tell our reporters is, if it's not important a year from today, why are we writing about it today? So we try to look ahead. It's a yardstick. You need a yardstick to select what you're going to cover, and that's as good a yardstick as we could find. The future importance of what we do and the impact on readers. If they can use it, if they can use it to live better or make money, we win. And if we can find something nobody else has done, we're also winning.
Carmen, talk a little bit about the demographics of Miami Today. They're really incredible, the numbers that you have.
Well,
like median income.
We're one of the few publications that it's audited and surveyed. So the numbers that we have and we present to our advertisers are real. And they come from that survey that is, you know, separate. It's independent from whatever Miami Today does. And the demographics are about almost 28,000 circulation, about 67 readers,
67,000,
about 259,000 income.
Mean household
income.
That's a
that is incredible because the New York Times is 178,000. Of course, is broader circulation, so it dilutes it. But still, I mean, it's pretty impressive in a city like Miami. This is not New York or Chicago. So, so of course, 95% of our readers have gone to college, which is also very impressive because there are other newspapers that are about lawyers, and not they only have about 80-something percent college educated. So we even have more. So what do we do is we reach that 2% of the population that can think and can act and is more prone to act on anything that's presented, news-wise or advertising, than any other publication that would appear. So there are a lot of very interesting facts about the paper. I mean, these are people that are moving money in this town or those that need to know what those people are doing because they would like to be doing it in the future.
And hence they're very attractive to advertisers, the people who do things, vacation, spend money, and you're reaching those people, so advertisers want to reach them as well.
Very true, very true.
Michael, your roots in South Florida journalism go way back, to many of our listeners probably weren't even aware of the old Miami News, the Cox newspaper.
That was the so afternoon great. Paper here in town.
Give us a little bit of a primer on journalism history here.
Well, journalism history before my time, there were three daily newspapers in English in Miami, and that was in the 1930s. And then the Herald merged in with the Tribune, and there was the News and the Herald. The News was the larger of the two papers going into World War II and had the larger circulation and made some fairly bad business decisions over the course of the years. And the Herald surpassed them coming out of World War II and became the largest newspaper in the community. But the News joined the Herald in what's called a joint operating agreement.
Which happened in other markets also.
It happened in about 38 or 39 or 40 markets. That's right, Joe. And the idea was a failing newspaper, and that in case was the News, could join with another newspaper and could avoid antitrust laws. So the Herald controlled everything about us but our newsroom. We had no advertising department. We had no circulation department. We had no promotion department. There were 115 of us in the News operation, and I was the liaison. Besides being the assistant managing editor, I was the liaison to circulation, to advertising, to promotion, one of two liaisons to production. We had another one who was actually better at it. But we did a liaison with every other department, but they were all Herald people. And the idea was to get the Herald people to do things to raise the circulation and advertising of the Miami News. You can imagine that did not go particularly well. When I joined the News, we had zero people selling advertising for us, which doesn't bring a lot of advertising. By the time I left, we'd gotten that up to two. Miami Today, of course, has more people than that for a weekly newspaper, so that wasn't going to keep the News alive. I left the News in 81, and the News closed in 1988. It was a daily.
You had great foresight there.
Well, we knew about the contract. There was a 30-year contract, I believe it was 30 years, and we knew that that was going to run out. And I got out before the contract ran out, which wasn't foresight. I knew that there was also a market for something else in the community. Neither the News nor the Herald at that point had much of an international look, in my opinion. And my thought was that we have an internationalizing community here in Miami. In 1981, I left to try to start Miami Today. And it took 17 months to get the paper going. That means that I was probably the slowest startup newspaper in history, but it had a foundation when we got started and a background. And we knew that the population was changing. As you know, the mix in our community is so different. I was looking today at our annual book of leaders, the people we profile. 15 of the 53 people we profile were born in another country. And you can say, well, they're all Cuban Americans. That's not true. 4 of the 53 were Cuban Americans. 2 were Brazilians. And the others were all from a different country, all over the globe, including one from Saudi Arabia. People are born in different places, and they wind up in Miami. It's a great community for news, and it's a great community, period. But you have to look at it as not just a local city like I thought the two newspapers were looking at it at that point. So we wanted to have a different perspective.
How did you resist maybe the impulse that some people might think that you should do would be, instead of Miami Today, making it South Florida Today, to try and embrace more coverage in Broward and Palm Beach counties?
We looked at other areas, but the truth of the matter is, if you get too broad, then you're nothing to anybody. I mean, one of the things that we try to do is be very, very focused on what our readers need. And we know our audience, we know who they are, and we felt that every county and every community had different needs. And we couldn't possibly provide all those needs with a weekly newspaper. We felt that focusing on the audience, and Carmen gave you some of the demographics, but we knew all the demographics cold, and we've surveyed our readers every couple of years as to what they want, what kind of news they need, and how we can provide it. And our surveys show, obviously, that we're meeting their needs, but we looked at what they needed before we put out a newspaper.
That seems to go counter to the thoughts of many people as far as looking at it as a tri-county area, be it transportation, tourism, and the economy.
Well, Joe, we cross all lines. We're very local, but we look at the whole globe. what comes in and links with Miami-Dade County is important to us. Of course, we're interested. My column today talks about what's going on in Tallahassee. But Tallahassee, as it relates to Miami-Dade County, it obviously relates to the whole state of Florida. I believe in regionalism very strongly, so you've raised a really good issue. But I also believe that people need to know certain information in their own area. Regional information would be very difficult to produce, I think, and be meaningful to people in all the different regions.
Carmen Betancourt-Lewis, tell us a little bit more about you and your background. You have such a fascinating international side to you.
Well, we left Cuba in 1960 when my grandmother realized that we had to go. And so I, we went through the first 6 years. It was really very tough for most of us because no one in the family had ever worked. And so all of a sudden my mother had to go out. And, you know, there's a Cuban story in every home, and mine is one of them. So I have lived in New York. I have twice. I have lived in Madrid. I have lived in Santiago de Chile. And I was really exposed. I like being exposed to different people from different backgrounds. And there's nothing more interesting than people. So when I arrived in Miami, I had no idea what I was going to do. And I met Michael Lewis. And he proposed not only that I come and work with him, but that he asked me to marry him the first day we met. So you can imagine we didn't, but 7 months after we did marry. And so we have been a team for the last 33 years so far, and it has worked.
Here's the ultimate question.
Yes.
How do you work together, man and wife, for 30 years? How do you pull that off?
It's been very easy, I have to say, and this is not a hypocritical comment. First, he's a very special human being. And second, he gives me room to think and to, you know, we check what we're going to do because we have to be on the same page. But definitely.
And there's so many judgment calls putting out a newspaper.
The interesting thing is that our judgment calls, I'm going to jump in here, we have on the big issues, we agree on everything. On the little issues, we can disagree mightily, and we'll talk about it and make a decision. But we have a division in the paper. She runs the business side, and she makes the decisions on the business side. I run the news side, and she does not know what's going to be in the paper. It could be about her customer or somebody else. You can't run a newspaper where the business side is involved in the decision-making about news. So it's very clear. When she sees a newspaper that comes out each week, to her, it's brand new. She didn't know what decisions were made.
Well, we have a complete separation of church and state, and we have a lot of respect.
Which is
the
template for a great newspaper anywhere.
And people wouldn't believe that. They find it difficult to really believe it, but it works like that, and that's the reason why it has worked so well. We have a great working atmosphere in the paper, not only among ourselves, but among our employees.
And Joe, as a journalist, you know perfectly well that you can't pay any attention to who's putting the money up. You can't pay attention to where the money comes from. If you do that in radio, in television, in newspapers, anywhere, you no longer have a credible product. And credibility is all that we stand with, as you stand with credibility. That's what we live by.
Well, I have many, many, many questions to ask you. We're going to take a short break. We're speaking with Miami Today, the two founders and the forces behind Miami Today, Carmen Betancourt-Lewis and editor Michael Lewis. We'll be back with more. And we're back 21 minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman has the day off. She'll be returning with us tomorrow, of course. And we resume our conversation with Carmen Betancourt-Lewis. She's a longtime Miamian, and she's on the business side of Miami Today, the weekly newspaper. And also with us is the publisher and editor and founder of the newspaper, Michael Lewis. Let's talk a little bit about your Achievers and Leaders book. Actually, your Achievers is a column in the paper each week, and I have to give a little bit of a trade secret as I look at that very often, and we will book guests that you pick out from that achieving list. What's behind that?
Those are the profiles that we've done each week in our newspaper. Since day one, we've always profiled somebody that we thought was important to the community, who's going to be important in the past and also in the future, leading the community forward, because we're trying to look forward with what's coming in the newspaper. So we select people who have done things already important who will continue to do them. So that each week we do a profile. It's a long interview with somebody. And then at the end of the year, we compile those profiles into a book. Miami doesn't have a book called Who's Who, and they may not exist anywhere anymore, but they used to be everywhere, Joe, as you remember. And you want a book of who the important people are in a community. This last year, it was 53 people for 53 weeks in a leap year. And we compile those into a book. We've done it for 20 years. And now you've got more than 1,000 of those profiles sitting out there that people can refer to on the shelf if you have a shelf of these books of leaders. And they're actually available. The back issues are available. Somebody could do a shelf if they wanted to.
You have a current issue of that.
The current issue has just come out. It's out right now.
It's really a very slick, beautiful book. It might be good for someone who is young and starting in business to read those profiles. How many people is it? Like
53. One per week. And yeah, the profiles are useful because we talk to people about how they got started in the world, what they've done, what they think about things, what their recipe for success is in a lot of cases. And we always ask them what their personal philosophy is. And everybody has a different personal philosophy. You get a feeling for people. I read through a profile of somebody we did 5 years ago before I go talk to them. If you want to talk to somebody, you do a little homework. You do your homework for your show. I think people should do that in the business world as well before you try to do business with somebody. And they're fascinating. They cut across a range from hospitality to international business to government. There are 10 or 12 different categories in each book of people, and we try to categorize them. Some people could fit in 3 or 4 categories. They're very broad in what they do in this community. And we pick young people. There are people in their 20s in that book. There are people in their 60s in that book and everywhere in between.
I'm not sure, but it seems to me from reading Miami Today over many years that you get a lot of young reporters who need some experience, and I think they get it, and they really learn at your hand, Michael. Is that accurate?
But that is accurate. We've had a number of young people over the years. I'm very fortunate right now to have two very experienced reporters with me, many years of experience, but this isn't always the case. And we like to start young people as well. I think people need really good training in journalism. They need somebody to tell them, this is the way you structure a sentence, or this is the way you do an interview, or how you do things. I was fortunate as a young person to have had a Pulitzer Prize winner as a landlord, a man named Leland Stowe. And I can remember Lee giving me advice over a cup of coffee or something. Here's what you should have done. I had nothing to do with him other than he was my landlord, and he was very helpful in that. And I always thought I could pass on a little bit as the way Lee passed things on to me. One of his great ways to write. Here's a Lee Stowe quote: "Strong verbs marching on lean, muscular prose." Forget the adjectives, forget the adverbs, strong verbs marching on lean, muscular prose. I try to teach that to every young reporter who comes past, and some of them can quote it back to me now, which is a good thing. So I stole it from Lee, and I pass it along.
Both of you, what kind of advice would you give to someone maybe getting out of college or only a year or so in media under their belts? Such a tremendous explosion of places to say things, but it's still the basic of having something to say to begin with.
And that's the hard part. I mean, frankly, a young person needs somebody, whether it's me or somebody else, to try to help guide them along, because, frankly, just taking something and putting it out on the airwaves, putting it out especially on the Internet, and anybody can put anything out there, and the fake news word, they're not trying to fake news, but maybe they didn't know quite how to do it, and they really need to get into it. It helps to have done what you did, Joe, and go to a great journalism school like Missouri. I went to the University of Michigan. But somewhere you need to have the background. If you don't, you certainly need to work under somebody else. I believe in the internship route to getting somewhere, and I believe the old trade route where you work to somebody as an apprentice, if you will. Young person needs to work with somebody who's had some experience. You think you're good, but you don't know unless you work for somebody else. Quick story. My first jobs were working for myself as newspapers. I started a newspaper when I left graduate school.
On the corner.
I started a newspaper. I left graduate school at the University of Michigan, drove north into a little town called Harbor Springs that had no newspaper. I'd been there once for a half an hour in my life. Drove north, started a newspaper. It's still running under somebody who worked for me. But the idea was I never worked for anybody else. And after years of running that newspaper, I said, I'm going to have to go to a daily newspaper and work for somebody who knows something because I don't know if I'm right or wrong. Let me go work for somebody who knows something. And I went to Baltimore and worked for a daily newspaper there to try to get some background and learn things that I couldn't teach myself, obviously.
I suppose no matter what happens technologically, if you have the ability to write and good news judgment, you're going to fit in no matter what the medium.
No matter what the medium. And frankly, Joe, you may not be in news business at all. Some of the best lawyers have the ability to write good news judgment, and ask good questions. A lot of them have had that kind of background. When Tad Foote was president of the University of Miami, and you remember Tad, he had been a law school dean before that. He was an attorney.
Washington University,
as you well know, your hometown. He was a good lawyer before that, but he started out as a newspaper man in Washington, D.C., working for the Washington Daily News. And I think the Evening Star as well did a little bit with them. But he had newspaper background, and he parlayed that into becoming the president of a great university in Miami.
Carmen Betancourt Lewis, tell me a little bit more about how you will go about presenting Miami Today and what some of the challenges are you have from the business side of this.
Well, the challenges
are... It's a miracle that you keep this paper banging away like this.
Yes, it's tough. You know, I get a lot of rejections. And it's tough to handle. And it's more rejections than it was 10, 15 years ago. See, advertising agencies don't find us sexy. You know, they don't read us generally. I mean, generalizing, okay? But it's not a newspaper that's directed to them. And so they ignore the fact that they think Miami Today is not as well read as they think, or the newspaper world is changing and is not as popular reading newspapers than it is. So I have to overcome and over and over and over until I wear people down. So it's a tough task, and it has gotten really tougher in the last 3 years. Yes, definitely. But it's another thing is that I don't know how much the other publications charge for the advertising. But we have never changed our prices. And so we have stayed with the same prices. We only increase it about 2% every year. And people find us that we're expensive. And I always say, in comparison to what? If I bring you results that you really need, we're not expensive, just the opposite. So it's a constant, you know, doing and approaching
people. So you must have a lot
people.
Of repeat clients.
Oh, yes. And we do have a lot of clients that believe in this paper and have been solid supporters of it. Yes, definitely. And the fact that we have the county and the city as contracts really helps. And
a lot of public notices.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because they know that the people that would react on those notices will be the typical reader of our paper. So definitely, we're making a dent in this community, definitely. And It's the paper is highly regarded and respected, and the right people are reading
it. In a couple of words, who are your clients? Are they your demographic? Well, movers and shakers.
Interesting. Our clients should be our banks, but banks are not advertising these days, at least not much. And so we have real estate, and that's tough also because they've been affected recently. So it's really the health industry should be there and is using us because, of course, everything is changing so fast in the health business. And
I think it's fair to say, wouldn't you, Carmen, that you go across the board mm-hmm. with a few people in each category? Mm-hmm. Is that a fair thing to say?
It really applies to anyone that would like to have branding or an organization that needs donors. We had profiles where people, the organization, have gotten anonymous donations because of
a million dollars or more, which is yes. which is the, that's mm-hmm. three cases.
So if one of your achievers is a CEO of a nonprofit. No,
but that's happened three times that we know of where it's been $1 million or more in the donation, just from having been profiled in Miami Today. Because our readership, again, Joe, as you know, is mostly on the executive end of the readership. And besides being well-educated, they use the materials a lot. So we're very business-oriented.
To engage with other companies or other people that have similar business or something that could mesh together and do business together. It's really a networking tool.
One of the things that's interesting, I think, is that that readership tends to have a longevity. We've had about 28,000 circulation now for 7, 8, 10, 12 years. And other publications, the circulation, you notice, has changed because people are leaving the print media in droves. And that's been one of the difficulties of the industry as a whole. And you're familiar across the country with the print industry has had difficulty.
Let me give out our telephone number for those who'd like to call in and speak with either Michael Lewis or Carmen Betancourt Lewis with a question or a comment. Our number is 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, emails, please keep them short, radio@WLRN.org. We'll be back with more on Topical Currents. And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you today. Bonnie Berman is off today. We're visiting with Carmen Betancourt Lewis and also the editor Michael Lewis of Miami Today. That's the weekly newspaper and is aimed primarily at the business sector, but it's very successful as a weekly newspaper. Michael, let's talk a little bit about some issues that are facing South Florida, and most everyone, we will begin with transportation. You've seen the whole thing since before Metro Rail even. Give us where we've been and where we're going from a transportation standpoint. What's important to you?
Well, what's important to me is what's important to everybody else in Miami-Dade County,
time.
I suspect. Yes, the time and the ability to get there in a way that, and I'll get back to your question, but the way to get there. Today we had to come here a half hour early or 40 minutes early because we weren't sure if traffic was going to keep us from getting here. We got right through. Doesn't happen that way all the time.
We have a Metro Rail station right here.
But boarding the Metro Rail is fairly difficult from where we are. We have to drive somewhere in order to go to board the Metro Rail, and we can't cross Dixie Highway. We're caught on the wrong side of Dixie Highway. There's a station right down the street, but we have to drive around to get there. The problem with Miami's transportation, as you know, Joe, is that we've built Metro Rail, which is a wonderful system, but it only goes...
With inherent flaws.
Huge inherent flaws. And then it only goes from one end to another end where there's a slight fork now at the end, one line going to an airport and the other to Hialeah, and then it goes out to Dadeland. And if you're on that route and you're going from somewhere near there to somewhere near the other end, it's spectacular. And if you're going to take the Metro Mover downtown and loop around and hook into Metro Rail, it works pretty well. When the Metro Mover's running, it works particularly well. The problem is that if you're anywhere else in Miami-Dade County, we don't have that. So right now the county's trying to look at a plan called the SMART Plan to have six transportation legs in six different parts of the county that eventually will meet each other somewhere and join and link together so we have an integrated transportation system, which would be absolutely wonderful. They've got a couple of problems in there. The first one begins with M and ends with Y, and O and E are in the middle. There's no funds for it. So right now they've got a great idea for these, and they're planning out six legs at once. And, of course, to be politically correct, you can't just plan one leg because somebody else will be upset on another leg. So you have to plan them all at the same time and say we're going to do them all at once, knowing full well that they can't all be done at once. It's impossible. They'll never be able to do it. So they say we'll do them all at once, and when we get a break somewhere, that's where we'll start. And I like the plans. They're good locations. Nothing much is happening right now. Maybe it's early. Maybe we should talk 5 years from now and see if anything got built or is going to get built. But we waited a long, long time. Metro Rail was built in the 70s. The plan was to continue to add on to that. It just never happened. We have wonderful plans. People change in political office. Funding changes. If we could count on the federal government, which we can't for a lot of funding, it would be one thing, and we've always counted on federal aid for transportation. So how do you do it when you have to do it locally? It's a very tough job for the Metropolitan Planning Organization, for the Miami-Dade County Board of County Commissioners. Miami-Dade Expressway Authority has a role in it. You have regional transportation people. You have Tri-Rail. Lots and lots of pieces coming together. The most interesting new piece is probably the All Aboard Florida rail line downtown, which could link us to Orlando, initially to Broward and Palm Beach counties, but then to Orlando. That's the most wonderful thing that I've seen coming down the road in quite some time. And they seem dead set on going forward. Construction's going on apace. And I can see that from Miami-Dade to Palm Beach County and back and forth fairly shortly. They plan to start something in 2017, I believe. So we're not millions of years away from actually adding transportation somewhere.
Okay, we're 1 month away from the start of another Florida legislative session. From a Miami-Dade County and Broward County situations, what do we need from Tallahassee this session?
First of all, we need the same thing we've always needed, but right now, my column today is on a particular topic, which is Tallahassee wants to take away the economic development and tourism arms in the state of Florida, and they aren't far away from looking at the Beacon Council, our economic development arm in Miami-Dade County. They've looked at Broward's economic operation. They're looking at 38 local operations throughout the state of Florida and asking for a great deal of information with the idea that these economic development operations are wastes of money. And my feeling is that developing jobs and developing tourism has got to be the number one thing that Tallahassee has to be looking at, and not saying we're going to kill that off and start doing something else. So I have a great concern that they're going down the wrong path. And this afternoon, probably as we speak, the first hearing on that bill is taking place in Tallahassee.
Now, as part of this, in reference to the controversy of the pit bull business, and that they're using too much TNA, for lack of a better word, in their advertising, and that it rubs the legislators the wrong way, the conservatives there.
I think you could say that that was not the cause of this, but something they can use to...
A leg up,
yeah. They've got something they can complain about. They've asked all of the 38 local tourism development and tourism and economic development operations to provide information to them about what they're spending money on, what their salaries are, what their people did, who they met with. Every single thing, they're going to audit it through the legislature, which to me is not a proper auditing arm, especially considering that most of these are funded locally. As far as I know, the Beacon Council, which is the economic development arm of Miami-Dade County, has not got a penny of funding from Tallahassee directly, and yet Tallahassee is auditing the Beacon Council, which is funded about 80% by the county government and about 15-20% by the business community here in town. Now, I would tell you I would like to see the business community put in a larger share of that, because it's very good for us to have the business community funded as well, and because it would help the funding to grow more business. I think it's a win-win for everybody, and I think that Tallahassee, looking at that, is a grave concern and should be to all of us. Other things we need? Obviously, we need some help with transportation. Obviously, healthcare and what we do in the healthcare field is going to be huge in Tallahassee.
A lot of things are up in the air there.
Across the nation. I mean, anything, you pick a topic and the legislature could help or hinder us. All sorts of bills are filed, as you know, every year, some of which have a realistic chance to get somewhere and some of which don't. And I'm not enough of a student to tell you which ones are going to get to the point where they become either a benefit or a danger to us. But those are real key areas to me: health, transportation, anything to do with education, and education funding is clearly central to us, and jobs and economic development, those four areas.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN, also email radio@WLRN.org. First caller, we've got Alan in Miami. Go ahead, Alan. Hi.
Good afternoon. I'm wondering where Mr. Lewis comes up with these great ideas for his columns each week, and whether he's had significant pushback on any of them.
The ideas are come from the news, really. What's going on in the community? We're trying to let the community set the pace, but we're looking at what might come in the future in this community. So we're looking at what's happening and where it might go in the future. Just complaining about something isn't good enough. We have to look at what we can do about it. We try to provide in our columns some kind of answers to things. Pushback, yes, of course, there are people who disagree with you, and that wouldn't be, it's logical that they would. Hell, I'm not right all the time. I don't know when I'm going to be wrong, but I can guarantee you if I look back at my columns of 10 years ago, I'll say that one I was off base on. Everybody is. So I would hope there'd be some pushback. I love reaction. We have a lot of letters to the editor, both on our MiamiTodayNews.com website and in print. We try to print especially those that are critical of what we had to say. There are a lot of good ideas in this community that could be voiced. I'm trying to raise a topic, trying to get somebody interested in it, and I hope they'll give us feedback. And I hope they'll provide their own ideas, because they're frequently better than anything we've come up with.
Well, please know that I look forward to it every week and try to read it as often as I can. And it's the first thing I do when I get your paper.
Alan, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks for your call. It's time for another short break on our program. It's Topical Currents. We'll be back with more. And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you. Bonnie Berman will return tomorrow. We're talking about the weekly newspaper Miami Today with Carmen Betancourt Lewis and also Michael Lewis. And they've been running the paper for 33 years now, Miami Today. It's hard to believe. Tell me, Michael, in the downtown area and homelessness, could you address what kind of process we have there? And also, you've seen this tremendous change in the downtown Miami area and the gentrification of it. What about affordable housing for those people in that area?
Okay, let me start with addressing the homeless, and we'll try to remember to get to affordable housing. We one time had our offices at 840 Biscayne Boulevard. Today, that's a row of luxurious high-rises. At that time, we and one dress shop and one lawyer were the only people in that whole area of Biscayne Boulevard. And across the street from us was an abandoned gas station under which literally 80, 90, 100 people a night would sleep under the shelter of that gasoline station. Trucks would come by and feed them. I think that the community has done a tremendous job in probably cutting 80 to 90% of the homelessness off the downtown streets. That was 25 or 30 years ago, probably 25.
The center over here is really a remarkable place, and it's copied in many urban areas.
Carmen, you want to say anything about the Chapman Center? You've been involved with that.
Well, but I am only in the social part of it, so I'm not really that active
on
the board.
Well, the Chapman Center has done a tremendous job, I think. I think that the Camilla's House has done a tremendous job also over the years.
For many years,
getting people off the streets. And I think people understand that we've been able to get, there have been other places to help homeless women. Lotus House has been able to help the homeless women who have children.
Families.
And these are all organizations that are downtown doing a wonderful job. So we come down to the hardcore. And what we've gotten off the streets are the people who really want a job, who really want to rehabilitate, who really want to grow, who really want to get off the streets. And what's left are people who, because of mental illness or other reasons, are hard to get off the streets. And we're down to that, and they're still visible, and they're still the problem. And as the community gentrifies, and you're right, we're going to see less and less housing that would be available to people who are just getting out of homelessness and into something else. There is a little bit of it that exists downtown. That's probably going to disappear. We hear murmurs about people going after some of that space and developing something that would be much more luxurious. Downtown has become a hot place to live. Young people who never would have dreamed of coming to downtown Miami now live in downtown Miami, work in downtown Miami, and entertain themselves and can almost shop in downtown Miami.
The Brickell area is really sizzling.
Well, Brickell is amazing. We started our newspaper at 444 Brickell Avenue in a high-rise building, which will soon be torn down for much bigger buildings. And at the time, we'd go home at night And I'd walk out of the streets and say, I wonder if I'm going to see another live human being. It's after 6 o'clock at night. Will there be anybody else on the streets at night? Sure. There were no cars. There were no people. And Brickell has become the hotspot. Brickell City Center has done a tremendous development with a lot of shopping. Again, there's a question of whether people's necessities can be purchased still in Brickell. You may have to leave the area. There are 3 groceries now, some pharmacies, but beyond that, If you wanted to buy a set of towels at a reasonable price or some sheets, where would you go to get them? I'm not quite sure.
I guess Midtown.
There. Midtown is probably the answer.
Target there. Yeah.
But Brickell at one time was just a daytime only area. And now it's 24/7. You can go down the streets and watch people walk their dogs. I think it's wonderful. Kids are out at night with their parents. People pushing baby strollers. The community has changed so well, and will continue to change.
How much of the arts did the arts contribute to our economy?
I can't tell you dollars. You could talk to Michael Spring from the county, and he'll tell you a huge number, true.
Just as far as influence.
Influence is huge. Art Basel changed the community tremendously. If you talk to people from Europe or other countries, and why are they so interested in being here, they'll always bring up Art Basel was a catalyst, one of the catalysts that brings them here. There are others. I mean, we have sun, sand, and surf, and we've always had that. But now we also have the culture that they would have found in Europe or somewhere else, and they're very happy to move here 4 months a year, 6 months a year, sometimes longer. Sometimes they become permanent residents. That contributes to the real estate economy, contributes clearly to shopping, contributes to tourism.
It changed Wynwood quite a bit, and now it's changing Little Haiti even.
Yeah, Little Haiti is the next area of change, and the question is how much. And then the question becomes what happens to the residents of all these areas who were there before. Working house class housing is a real problem in this community. We have a story in our paper today about infill housing and the need for more housing for lower middle and middle income persons, and it's a tremendous need. And you will find people like Pinnacle Housing who develop some of that, including some in the Brickell area, but we need a tremendous amount more. Who are the people who are working in all these stores, and where are they going to live? They certainly can't live in Brickell at the prices that that you charge for most of this housing. And it's a problem throughout Miami-Dade County. It's going to be a continued problem until we figure out a way to balance the housing so that the average working person has a place to live, not 10 miles. Because don't forget, transportation isn't good enough to get to their homes. They have to drive in that awful traffic for an hour and a half is not unusual.
And it's costly nowadays.
Very costly. We need to figure out some way to get a mixed housing and a mixed group in an area so that we don't completely gentrify an area.
I have an emailer here, Carol. She says, I worked for Miami Today back in the late 1980s in advertising sales. I want to echo Michael's comment about how Miami Today keeps their news very separate from their advertisers. When I tell people that I used to work for the paper, I tell them about the great integrity of Michael and Carmen. I can tell you that I don't see much integrity in most of the print media today.
Carol, thank you very much. We remember you well.
Let's move along to, I've got a caller here, Joanna. She's been waiting a long, long time. Joanna, thanks for your patience. Hi.
No problem. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, I guess, more so for Michael, Mr. Lewis, but I was wondering if you were taking any interns. I've always had a deep concern for what's going on in my community and how it's highlighted and that it be a genuine voice. And at the moment, I'm in school for acupuncture and oriental medicine in Fort Lauderdale, but I'd just love to know if you would be accepting any internships.
We are accepting internships. I talked to my last summer intern before I came over here, within an hour of coming over here, who still does some writing for us. We're happy to have interns. Normally, Joanna, we're looking for somebody who had some experience in journalism and some knowledge of it, mm-hmm. and some background. I'll be happy to have a resume. Send me one. My email is mlewis, M as in mother, L-E-W-I-S, at miamitodaynews.com. I'm happy to look at all internship candidates. Can't promise you anything other than that I will look carefully. Include a cover letter of why you're interested in this. What makes you really interested in being a journalist, and give me some kind of a background, and I'll be happy to look.
Of course, absolutely.
Okay, there's a
good
start for you. Thank you very much.
Joanna, thank you.
And we'll move along to Dwayne in Kendall. Dwayne, you're up. Hi.
Hi. My question is just one of general interest in technology. I wanted to know, what is your outlook on the future of technology in Miami? Is there going to be a boom, any signs of a boom coming, or is this something that's gradually going to slowly incline, but nothing as substantial as let's say in Atlanta for headquarters and so on? I know Uber has recently come down to Miami, but are there any other signs that you see that are promising?
Dwayne, honestly, I'm not an expert in technology. My impression is that we're going to be growing in technology, and I think every city in this nation of any size is going to be, because that's the future of the economy in lots of ways. Now, whether we're going to be a tech hub or a high-tech hub, I couldn't tell you for sure. Everybody wants to be one, and yes, not everybody can be the cutting edge. We're not all going to be Silicon Valley. So
right.
we're going to probably have to specialize in certain areas, and every other city is going to have to specialize in certain areas. Everybody can't do everything well. We certainly can't live for our – we can't have an economy that's based on making beds for visitors, and that is going to be our economy. So we have to broaden, and technology is certainly going to be a key part of it. We'll see the world change. And changes very, very, very rapidly. But what exact areas those are going to be, that's going to depend a little bit on the kinds of people who come in here, young people with a spark and some income, who will develop small businesses that grow larger. Some will succeed, some will fail, and some of them will be in the tech area, and we'll see some of those become important. I can't tell you which ones. I wish I could.
So you haven't seen any specific signs or anything that would indicate any kind of a substantial growth or anything to that effect, specifically for Florida?
We see a lot of young people who meet regularly in everything from coding to other areas of technology, and they're all those areas are growing. But which one will actually succeed? You find a lot of hubs of tech companies huddled together in incubators. And who will succeed? The incubators may help us know better than I do, to be very, very candid with you.
I understand. I appreciate you taking my call.
Dwayne, thank you so much.
James, thank you very much. Well, I certainly want to thank you, Michael Lewis and Carmen Betancourt Lewis. It's been quite a pleasure and an honor to have both of you on our program today. And also, you've been doing this for 33 years now. We aren't looking at any kind of R word here.
R?
Is in retirement.
Not at the moment, but it's going to happen at a certain point, and younger people will be doing the job, as all of us won't be sitting in our chairs 50 years from now. We can tell you that, Joe.
Okay.
Thank you very much for having us. We really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure to be with you.
And thanks for listening today. Our program was produced by Polly Landis, technical direction from online programmer Jason Zabka, and Richard Lives is lead producer. And don't forget about our free audio archives available at our website, wlrn.org. Follow the radio, then the Topical Currents link. We also have the Topical Currents Facebook page, as well as the iTunes podcast. That brings us to tomorrow. We start with a salute to the grand old dame of South Miami, the incredible Vizcaya Museum and Gardens. It's its 100th anniversary. Also, Linda Gassenheimer and her Chef of the Week talk about special Valentine's Day treats, gourmet donuts. This is Joseph Cooper. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned for the Talk of the Nation. I'm sorry, for Here and Now from NPR News.